Welcome to the Wildverse podcast, where we introduce you to the wild world of taxidermy, a place where artists and hunters collide. I'm Ashley.
And I'm Heather.
Today's episode is going to be all about animals that are illegal to possess and those that have special regulations. We did our research and we are excited to share things that we learned.
Yeah, there are so many animals that have special regulations, so it was hard to narrow it down, but we tried to pick the ones that we as taxidermists will most likely encounter, and maybe we even threw in one or two that were just fun to learn about. So, all of that being said, Ashley, would you like to start us off with the first regulated animal of the episode?
Sure. I'd like to start off with the most common animal that we as U.S. citizens know that we cannot touch. That would be the American eagle. That includes the bald eagle and the golden eagle.
Yes, so I'm not sure of anyone that doesn't know that they're a big like no-no to touch, possess, or even have a feather from.
Yeah, that's kind of like what you think about when you think of stuff that you can't have or you can't touch, you can't have any pieces of them. Eagles, you know, they're super protected. So let's see. So eagles have different regulations than other birds of prey. So like eagles are treated super differently than other types of birds we're going to talk about. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife has a good article explaining the laws regarding eagles and Native American rights to eagles. The article is called Possession of Eagle Feathers and Parts by Native Americans. I'm going to read a little bit of this article. It's super factual, super just has what you're looking for in terms of what you can like possess and like the Native American laws regarding them. So eagles are directly protected under two federal laws, the Bald and Golden Eagle Protection Act and the Migratory Bird Treaty Act. These laws generally prohibit the possession, use, and sale of eagle feathers and parts, as well as a number of other activities. Such restrictions help ensure the future viability of eagles in the wild. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, however, has long recognized the religious and cultural significance of eagles to Native Americans and works to accommodate those special needs. So, the service operates the National Eagle Repository as a clearinghouse for eagles and eagle parts to provide Native Americans with eagle feathers for religious use. So the repository collects dead eagles salvaged by federal and state agencies, zoos, and other organizations. Enrolled members of federally recognized tribes, as established under the Federally Recognized Tribal Act, may obtain a permit from the service authorizing them to receive and possess eagle feathers and parts from the repository. Permit applications must include certification of tribal enrollment from the Bureau of Indian Affairs because demand is high. Waiting periods exist. Native Americans may also legally possess eagle feathers and parts acquired through certain other means. Such items include any owned before eagles were protected by federal law. So for bald eagles, it was 1940, and for golden eagles, it was 1962. And so if you had feathers and parts passed down within a family, you can keep them within your family, basically. Native Americans may wear feathers legally in their possession or make them into religious and cultural items for their own or tribal use. They may transfer feathers to tribal craftsmen to be fashioned into objects, but no money may be received for the feathers, but craftsmen may be compensated for their work. So like you can pay people for the labor, but not the actual like feathers. Like you can't sell the parts.
But it sounded like you have to be a tribal member to do anything with them. Is that, did you find yes. anything out? Like, you can't be an English person that does something with them for the tribal person, for the native.
Everything I've found is no, that like if you are, you know, white, you can't be hired by a Native American to taxidermy an eagle. As far as I can see, that's a no.
Okay. All right. Yeah, that's what I was mainly curious about. Like, they can get the permit and they're able to have them, but like, can they contract a taxidermist? I guess it can, as long as it's a native taxidermist.
Yeah, if that taxidermist is Native American and they have like a documentation of that, like if they have a roll number or something, then yeah, they could, in theory. This next paragraph says a little bit more about that. It says Native Americans can give feathers or other eagle items as gifts to other Native Americans and may hand them down within their families. They may not, however, give them to non-Native Americans. So like you can't even be gifted something from a Native American. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, I honestly don't know if I've ever even seen, like, a real, you know, I see all the fake Native American crafts of, like, the dyed turkey feathers. You know, they dye, like, the tip black or something. And
yeah.
I don't know if I've ever seen, like, a real one.
Yeah, because, you know, when they have, you know, you see eagles taxidermied at like taxidermy competitions. The World Show had like three of them. They're recreations. They're made out of chicken feathers.
Yeah.
Or whatever feathers.
Yeah.
And that's a super common way to find eagle taxidermy, quote.
I know some people, I think Fred Vanderberg, I think is how you say his last name. He mounted an actual eagle, I think. But it must have been for like a museum or something, is my guess.
Yeah, see, maybe.
Because, you know, like museums and stuff can get them.
Actually, not really. So this, the National Eagle Repository, it takes all the eagles from anywhere. And then basically some Native Americans, they can apply to get eagle parts from the repository.
That is complicated.
It is. So I have another just little piece of information here. So the National Eagle Repository is a facility operated and managed by the Office of Law Enforcement, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. The main purpose is to receive, evaluate, store, and distribute dead golden eagle and bald eagles parts and feathers to Native Americans and Alaska Natives who are enrolled members of federally recognized tribes throughout the United States. Also to develop and provide educational programs regarding wildlife trade, wildlife laws, raptors, and the Native American Eagle Feather Program. So whenever an eagle is found dead, killed, whatever, anywhere in the United States, it goes to the repository and then it gets distributed to Native Americans.
I knew they could. I knew that Native Americans could possess them, but I didn't know it was honestly that complicated.
Yeah, I was under the impression that like a Native American could find one dead and then they get that one, but I don't think that's how it works specifically. I think if anybody, including them, finds one, they have to turn it in and it goes to this facility and then it gets distributed out from there, because it kind of is like, it seems like there might be a waiting list. You know, people can apply, try to get some pieces, feathers, whatever, and I think it sounds like there's more applicants than there are eagle parts to distribute, so they're in high demand.
Yeah, and I'm sure that they probably only award so many a year, you would think. That's how most of those things work.
Yeah, maybe. Like, I don't think there's any, like, nobody goes around, like, killing eagles for any reason.
Well, that's what I just Googled, because I wanted to see if anything new popped up. So, on December 14th of 2023, USA Today put an article out about two Montana men allegedly killed 3,600 birds, including bald eagles, and they were selling them on the black market.
Is that a new thing?
It was just put out in December of 23, so in the last however many months. They illegally shot the birds and sold parts or all of the eagles between January of 2015 and March of 2021.
Jeez.
Yeah.
I thought I've maybe heard about that, but maybe not. But I mean, yeah, obviously there's no force field around these birds. They can't be, you know?
Yeah. Especially so, like, you know, where I live, we see a bald eagle, you know, a few times a year. They come off the river, and like, I know the one time I was coming in my driveway and I was looking out, I think there was a little bit of snow on the ground, and I was looking out through the field and I'm like, what the heck is that? And I saw this white thing, and it was a bald eagle out in the field. It was kind of gross. When we'd have animals die, like, you know, maybe a cat got hit on the road, we would put them in our manure spreader, and then we'd spread our manure, and this bald eagle is out there eating a dead cat.
See, that's the kind of funny thing about eagles, is like, they're this majestic, you know, patriotic bird, but they're actually just like a glorified vulture.
Yeah, so that's what the people in like Alaska, you know, they like, that's what I was kind of getting to, is we don't see them often, so it's not like common to even really... It's like a cool thing if you see one, but like in Alaska and probably Canada and stuff, they're like everywhere.
Yeah, they seem kind of a nuisance up there.
Yeah, it's like seagulls on the pier, you know, it's just all bald eagles and in parking lots and stuff.
Yeah, and then you think it's like super majestic, like, oh yeah, like there's eagles everywhere, but they're actually like you're saying, kind of a seagull creature in habit.
Yeah, they'll, I mean, it's cool when they catch like a fish out of a river, but they also like to eat whatever dead stuff they find.
Yeah, I like, I see bald eagles once in a while too, but kind of a cool thing, when I was back home in California, I set up a trail camera over, like, you know, some dead animal or whatever, and I had a bunch of pictures of a golden eagle, and it was so cool. Those things are huge. Like, I think they're bigger than bald eagles, and just massive, huge golden feet. That was really cool to see.
Yeah, they are super cool. I know I saw one, we were over like by our woods and heard all this commotion. It was like a bunch of crows or something. And I look up and then there's just this massive bird. Like you said, like they're just huge. And I was like, there's no, yeah. like, that was not a juvenile bald eagle. That had to be a golden because it was just massive.
Oh, yeah, because don't they, side note, bald eagles start out being not bald.
Yeah.
And they get bald as they age and how that works.
Yeah, yeah. They're just, like, brown.
Yeah. So, yeah, they're huge. But yeah, so that's the deal with eagles. I couldn't find any information, like we were talking about earlier, about if a taxidermist can do them. But it seems as though no. And I didn't find much information about Canada's eagle laws. Like, I just didn't research that as heavily. So I don't know their processes, but I assume it's similar.
Yeah, I don't know because, I mean, we had that picture that was shared to us from the Canada taxidermy show.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
And that looked like a real eagle. If it was a reproduction, it was really well done.
Yeah, we're going to have to put a note on that to see, like, was that one real or fake?
Yeah.
Did you see – oh, wait, you weren't at the last World Show because there was, like, three of them. And they were – it was really impressive to see – how realistic they can get them with just like chicken feathers.
Yeah, they use like chicken and turkey.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that like a turkey, kind of like their belly feathers can kind of pass for their some parts of them because they're just the color. I don't know. They look really similar. Not the iridescent parts, but they do have some drab ones. So, okay, past eagles, which not a lot of us see all the time and have just hanging around in our front yards. What about other birds like owls, hawks, and songbirds? Or did you have more to say about eagles?
No, that was it about eagles.
Okay.
So sometimes eagles can get like lumped in with other birds of prey and songbirds, but you know, obviously eagles are so different. The regulations for other birds are protected non-game birds, such as songbirds, hawks, owls. They can be legally brought to a taxidermist by game wardens, federal agents, or holders of appropriate state and federal permits. Once mounted, these birds can be legally possessed only by public, scientific, and educational institutions or individuals or facilities that have valid special purpose possession dead permits. Personal possession of non-game birds is prohibited. So like all those, you know, birds I mentioned, you can't just have them like in your house. They have to be used in some kind of like museum or educational purpose. But actually, English sparrows, common starlings, and feral pigeons are not native to the U.S., so therefore they're not protected by federal law.
Yeah, yeah, you can shoot all of them that you want for the most part and do whatever you want with them. But yeah, the songbirds and owls and stuff, I know I've dealt with them for like the education centers and nature centers and stuff. So like, it's cool to see them up close. They would pretty much bring you like their salvage permit and you'd hold on to it. And they brought me like this gigantic bag of birds that I had to sort through and like label. And I'm not a bird person. So I really had to like do my research. And I remember there was a hummingbird in there that was just beautiful. And the cool thing behind it was that it was actually a hummingbird that's more native to like the West Coast. And somehow it ended up over here on the East Coast. And like, I don't know if it ran into somebody's window. They found it dead somewhere. And that was super cool.
Why, was it different colored or something?
Yeah, like it was just whatever. I don't even remember what type of hummingbird it was. I just remember that it was like, I could tell by the color. And it had like the one little special marking on it that differentiated it from other ones. Yeah,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, but the only reason I could have them was because I had that salvage permit from those places. And, you know, we do the work and then just get it right back to them and they get to keep them, educate kids and all that good stuff.
Right. Like, so I've seen, like, I saw a hawk or something one time at a taxidermy show. And obviously it was, you know, just being displayed temporarily there as part of the competition. It still had to have that permit like next to it.
Mm-hmm.
Like mounted on the wall right next to the animal. So yeah, stuff like that. Permits don't seem super hard to obtain. Like there's obviously a big process and stuff, but it seems like for stuff like owls, songbirds, hawks, all that, if you happen to find one like out in the wild or whatever and it's dead, it seems like the process is don't touch it. Go to a agency, you know, game warden, whatever, get them, talk to them, and then handle it after the fact. Because that's how it seems to work here. But in Canada, it seems that like you can get those animals and you can pick them up and take them and then just go get a permit for them after. So like in Canada, the restrictions on it are like a little bit more lax. Here, it's pretty tight. So like, you know, you see people rip people apart if they're talking about owls and stuff, like, don't touch it, you know, you're gonna get in trouble. But you can actually get permits and stuff, but it is a process.
Yeah, like you can't get them for yourself. But you know, I know a lot of people, like what a nature center is probably gonna say is, trying to think of what word is. I think a lot of people, if they find something and it's freshly dead, they're going to pick it up, wrap it up, maybe put it in their freezer and then take it to a nature center. Like you said, though, that's probably not, that's more of like the lax way of doing it, I guess. You know, you're probably not supposed to.
I wouldn't recommend that. No, I wouldn't recommend that. That would be, yeah, not the advice I would get, at least here. I guess in Canada, seems like you can do that, but not here.
Yeah. Yeah. Here you can definitely get, because like what happens if you pick it up and put it in your freezer and then you just never, like you can't do that. You can't just never take it somewhere, you know, like you have to not have it in your possession. Yeah. I don't know. It's very touchy and they are very anal about their birds that you cannot hunt.
Yeah, you're right that you said something that like you can't have it for your personal possession. So like if you go out and you find a hawk or whatever and then you tell game wardens about it, they're not going to let you just keep it. They're going to take it for educational purposes, right?
Yeah.
The lucky thing, I guess, if you are a taxidermist and you happen to find one, you could maybe convince them like, hey, let me do the taxidermy work. And then that would be the way that you could taxidermy those animals. But otherwise, you know, unless you're hired by the agency or a museum or something, then that's kind of like, you know, the only options you'd have for mounting those animals.
Yeah. And another little side note story that has to do with birds like that is the fact that you can't. So you know how people paint turkey feathers and sell them?
Yeah.
You cannot do that with birds that are regulated. It doesn't matter that it's just a feather.
Oh, right.
Yeah. So you cannot sell any part of a animal like that, even though it's not from a dead animal.
Right. I don't even think you're allowed to have those in your possession. Like if you have a hawk feather in your house.
I feel like nobody would really, I don't know. Because, you know, when you're a little kid, like you see pretty feathers and like you pick them up in the yard. Technically, you're probably not allowed to do that. But
right,
who's going to come knock your door down for a kid that collected some feathers in their yard?
Right. Technically, you're not supposed to. But yeah, if you have like a single feather, I don't think you went and like poached an animal just to get a feather. You know,
I feel like that's kind of touchy. But what you can't do, which is what this guy in my story did, was this old man would pick up these pretty feathers. He would paint them. And then people would want to buy the paintings because they're really pretty on these pretty feathers. Well, this old man was fishing on a river one day and was talking to this guy fishing beside him, telling him about this. You know, he paints these feathers, he picks them up in his yard, whatever. Turns out the guy fishing beside him was an off-duty, like, fishing wildlife guy or whatever.
And
instead of just letting it slide because this poor old man didn't know any better or telling him, like, hey, you can't do that, they put together this whole sting operation and brought feathers to this guy and had him paint them. And when he charged them for it, they nailed him for it.
Man, well, they say, what do they say? Ignorance is no excuse for the law.
Yes. Meh. Yes. Something I know. Like that. Man, I just feel like I could never be like that. I'd be like, hey, look, you need to stop doing that. You can't do that. That's illegal. End of story.
Right. Like, I don't know. Think of the circumstance. Some old guy didn't know any better or something.
Yeah. Like, just inform people sometimes, especially when it's something that's not hurting anything. That's my opinion, just saying.
Yeah, like if the animal's already deceased.
Yeah, or like it's like, you know, they just naturally shed their feathers, so.
Oh yeah, or that too.
Yeah, it's not hurting anything, but I understand the whole thought behind like you don't want stuff on the black market or whatever. I don't know. That just gets touchy. But long story short, play it safe and not get in trouble. Don't touch eagles, songbirds, hawks, owls, anything that you can't hunt or shoot legally. Just don't mess with it.
Right, that's good advice. Like any bird that doesn't have a hunting season,
yeah,
don't mess with it.
Yep.
Get permission first.
Yeah.
So moving on from feathers, how about another animal that most people think of when you bring up animals that you cannot have here in the States?
Yeah, so let's move on to my first choice, and that would be polar bears. So polar bears are a very touchy subject. There are polar bear mounts that are in the U.S., that you can buy and sell with permits. So they are actually regulated by the Marine Mammals Protection Act. I guess because they live like on coasts and they feed on, seals and such, that they are regulated by them. It's not by any kind of, I don't know. I thought it was strange that they were regulated in a marine mammal thing.
Right, not like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife.
Yeah, Yeah.
You're counted as marine.
Yeah, I thought that animals. Was weird. Okay. But you can buy and sell them with a permit if it was before 1972. That's kind of when they became regulated and protected. They were added to the threatened list. So they're not endangered, but they are put on there for threatened just because of the changes as far as ice melting. They're kind of sort of worried that they might disappear by the year 2100.
Like go extinct.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of what some people are kind of, they're kind of guessing that maybe by the year 2100, there won't be any more polar bears. But that gets like on a touchy subject.
Yeah, it's a little bit controversial, right?
Yeah, so like when I Googled what the polar bear populations were, it brought up a whole, it brought up this like kind of fact checkers site. And when it got to the bottom, you know, some people claim that polar bears, there are more than ever. We have so many of them. Other people are claiming that they're like dying off because you always see the videos of like a sick polar bear or like, you know, it's skinny and starved, which happens to any animal like in that you can think of. There's going to be a sickly one. There's going to be one that can't find food.
There might be a little bit of propaganda around that.
Yes. So when I went on that fact checker site, they said that the info is misleading because there are more bears than we had 50 years ago. Like, you know, they really built their population back up because I guess over 50 years ago, there was a lot of overhunting of them. Because I would imagine if I lived where polar bears lived, I wouldn't want them coming into my village and killing me or my kids or my pets or, you know, anything like that. So I would assume they're probably trying to eradicate them for the most part because they are just huge, vicious animals. But there are like 22,000 to 27,000 in the world right now. And that is kind of a rough estimate because they said since they are so widespread, it is hard to get a good count on them. But they live in the Arctic, in the U.S., which Alaska, Russia, Greenland, Canada, and Norway.
That seems higher than I would have thought.
Yeah.
For population numbers.
Yeah.
That's pretty good, I feel. Well, and I bet it is hard to calculate them because like what you said, they're widespread and also they're white on snow. Like how can you get an accurate count?
And they live in a place that not a lot of people live. So it's not like you have a lot of sightings. Like you do have sightings of them, but you don't have a lot that people can really kind of count them. But they do say that their numbers are holding steady. If you went to hunt a polar bear, natives can hunt them. If that would be like in the U.S., like in Alaska, you can only hunt it if you're a native. You must use all the parts. They cannot be wasteful. That's part of the regulation with that. But Canada, you do not have to be a native to hunt a polar bear. You know, I know people that have paid to go on a polar bear hunt and they limit their numbers. So, you know, it's not like they have an open season. I think the one thing I read was only 19 females could like be harvested in a season. And I'm not sure how many males.
You could be a non-Canadian and a non-native and go to Canada and hunt a polar bear.
Yep. Yep. You can go, you can shoot a polar bear, but then you cannot bring it back to the U.S.
Yeah. So that was my next question. Like, so what are the chances of somebody being able to taxidermy a polar bear in the United States?
Zero. I don't know. I feel like unless it's for maybe a zoo, you might be able to. But that's why the polar bear reproductions became so popular. Because, you know, you go shoot a polar bear and you can't bring it home. So then you get a reproduction the same size as the one that you shot. And they look pretty good. Like, you know, if you know what you're looking for and you look up close, you can tell that it's not perfect, but I guess it's better than not having your bear at all.
Yeah, so how does it work then in Alaska? Because obviously the polar bears are already in Alaska, live, living there. So then if you're an Alaskan taxidermist, I would assume you'd be able to taxidermy them there.
I don't think so.
Can you not? Huh.
I'd have to honestly double check that, but I'm pretty sure that in the U.S. you cannot, like, you know, if you're native, you can hunt them and you can use them, but I feel like you can't actually like get them mounted.
Yeah, then can you not hire a taxidermist to mount it for you? I mean, maybe if you're a Native American and you are a taxidermist there, maybe it's a similar situation kind of like to the eagles, but I'm not sure. So that maybe. Might be.
Let me Google that because I didn't find any info on that. So pause for a second.
This episode of Wildverse is sponsored by Pro One Performance Chemicals. Pro1 specializes in tanning chemicals for the professional taxidermist. They offer a complete line of tanning products to provide you with everything you need to tan your next hide. I really like their ProMax Tan for my personal tanning projects. They make it so simple, it's easy to follow instructions printed right on the bottle. I actually used Pro1 to tan the deer that I won with at Nationals, and I was using this same tan to tan some bobcats last week. It's super versatile. Not only does Pro1 have you covered for all your tanning needs, they also sell Pro1 Hide Paste, the industry standard in glue. Heather and I both use Pro1 Hide Paste on every single mount. We love it. It has a thick consistency that makes it easy to apply to the form, yet it's soft and pliable enough that it can be easily manipulated under the skin after you throw the hide on. If you haven't tried Pro1 Hide Paste, I am telling you, you are missing out. And now, as of 2024, you can order Pro1 products directly online at pro1performancechemicals.com. That's P-R-O, the number one, performancechemicals.com.
So I had found out that if you are a native, you can get a polar bear hide tanned by a taxidermist. So you don't, that does not have to be a native taxidermist at all, but it's the same as the eagles where you cannot like gift parts of it to non-natives. So that was somewhat interesting. But the weird part is it says you can't gift things, but if you make polar bear handicrafts or clothing, you can export them to other countries.
Oh, so like you can make crafts and stuff out of them, and then that's okay to sell and whatever.
Yeah, it needs a CITES, but it's okay to like sell to other places. But I guess the U.S. is just the like, you know, no. Other countries is fine, but the U.S. is like not into polar bears.
Oh, like so if you're a person who lives in like Norway.
Yeah.
And legally obtained a polar bear that way, and then you could distribute it, perhaps. I mean, I guess obviously Norway has their own laws and stuff, but
yeah,
more likely to do it there than here.
I feel like the U.S. is the only country, if not one of the only countries, that you cannot import any polar bear parts into. If you're a taxidermist in Alaska, it didn't say anything about mounting them, but it did say that you can tan the hides. So I guess that's the closest you're going to get in the U.S. to being able to do that.
So like, yeah, if you were in Alaska, you can't be in Alaska and then ship the polar bear to the lower 48.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Yep.
Yeah.
I know. Okay. I've heard of a lot of like big trophy hunters having lodges in Canada and stuff so that they can, you know, hunt polar bears, and then they'll have like a Canadian trophy room lodge.
Oh.
So they can keep their polar bears. And then you had mentioned something about a warehouse idea.
So I don't know where I heard this from. I think it was in a podcast somewhere. Allegedly, there's like a warehouse at the border of Canada and the U.S., and it has like 40 some odd polar bears there, and it's just on like a standby permit basis to import them into the United States.
Mm. So I had heard if you had enough money, you could maybe get them into the U.S. So maybe that's like, maybe there's some sort of little backdoor, like, I feel like that's not true, but it's possible. I feel like with money, anything's possible.
That is true. So if you have enough money, you can do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd have to double check that, but there's...
I wouldn't be surprised, because if you shoot one, you know, you want to have it. So they're just, yeah. You know, I think I did hear that, because it's something like they're waiting in case the law changes.
Maybe that's it. Something like that. Yep. Like they're on standby for some reason.
Yep. Like once the law changes, then they can like strip them in and do something with them. But until then, if you ever see a polar bear hide for sale, it's got to have documentation and permits saying that it was done before 1972, or you cannot buy it. I know I had an Inuit message me one time. Maybe it was a government trying to get me in trouble, but
oh,
they messaged me and they're like,
it was a sting operation.
Yeah, they sent a picture of this Inuit guy with a polar bear and asked if I would be interested in the hide. It was like $1,500, and I'm like, I feel like I can't do this. So no.
This seems suspicious.
Yes, that would be very suspicious.
Huh. So yeah, chances are I probably can't taxidermy a polar bear here, like yes. You were saying. But there is a lot of cool replicas out there.
Yeah.
So we're talking about polar bears. Staying on the bear topic, what about the fascinating topic of panda bears?
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about panda bears. So you're going to have to kind of fill me in on what info you collected.
Yeah, panda bears, they've got some crazy... laws regarding them too. So there's something called the panda diplomacy, The panda diplomacy is the practice of sending giant pandas from China to other countries as a tool of diplomacy and wildlife conservation. So from 1941 to 1984, the Chinese government gifted pandas to other countries, but since 1984, they have been leased rather than gifted due to a policy change. So basically all pandas in zoos around the world are on loan from China.
I wonder how much they charge for this loan.
That's a great question. Let me give you some more information. So the standard lease terms include a fee of up to $1 million per year and a provision that any cubs born during the lease period would be the property of the People's Republic of China. So since 1998, because of a World Wildlife Fund lawsuit, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service allows a U.S. zoo to import a panda only if the zoo can ensure that China will channel more than half of its loan fee into conservation efforts for the wild pandas. So like the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, they won't let zoos in America loan or, you know, lease the pandas unless the funds go to wildlife conservation.
So like the money that they're paying for the lease, they're proving that it's going to something good and not just in their pockets.
Yes.
Type of deal.
Yeah, exactly. So like it's not just going to China, like it has to go towards panda conservation. As of right now, Atlanta in Georgia is the only zoo in the United States that has pandas. They have four pandas and their contract expires this year, I believe. So they may return to China later this year. Like that's kind of been undetermined so far. But in February 2024, last month, the China Wildlife Conservation Association announced plans to send a new pair of pandas to the San Diego Zoo as early as summer 2024. So nearly 5 years after the zoo returned its pandas to China.
Huh. That's a lot of, like, why are pandas so, I mean, I guess they're kind of so rare and regulated because they don't seem like the smartest animals. Like when you see videos, no. Like they're really clumsy. It sounds like they're hard to breed, at least in captivity.
Yeah. So I guess their like heat cycle or like their window of mating, conception or whatever.
Yeah.
It's only like 24 hours to 72 hours a year. Like it's a super narrow window. And then like you're saying, they're not the most like, you know, resilient animals.
No.
I guess they're bad mothers.
Okay.
Like they don't take care of their young very well. So that, and then like obviously their home range is just so small. Like it's just China.
Yeah.
Just, you know, Asia, and they have limited food sources, like all that stuff. And then they're just very sacred to the Chinese people and to China. They're like a very sacred symbol to them because actually, so one instance, this is from National Geographic. So Ken Walker, he's a taxidermist. I think he's in Canada, right?
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, he was here, I think, at the Smithsonian. There's a little story from that. So let me go ahead and read what it has to say. So he was part of a team brought in to restore the Smithsonian collection of taxidermy. Ken Walker discovered that the museum still had the body of Sing Sing. I don't know if I'm saying that right. A giant panda who had died in 1999. China had given this panda to the U.S. government as a gift, like while it was still alive, I believe. And the Smithsonian was afraid that mounting the panda would be perceived as an insult to China. Mm-hmm. So using Sing Sing as inspiration, Ken Walker constructed a panda mount and covered it with two black bear skins, one of which he bleached. The result is pretty much indistinguishable from the real thing. In fact, Ken Walker caused a bit of an uproar when he entered it into the 2003 World Taxidermy Championships, as real pandas are illegal to taxidermy. But once the confusion was cleared up, he took home two awards, Best in World Recreation and the Competitor's Choice Best of Show.
It did look really good.
Yeah, I sent you that picture of it.
Yeah, so what I had heard about that, you said about how you use black bear hide to like recreate it. So what I had heard was it was black bear, but the hide that he dyed white was a cinnamon bear. Like he didn't start with black because the black was like super hard to get white.
That checks out.
But because cinnamon was already a lighter color, he could whiten that.
I feel like I read that too somewhere. But yeah, so he used just two bears, recreated Sing Sing. Because I guess if it was real, it sounds like China would get like super mad. Like that would be a huge insult. Might start World War III. I don't know.
Oh, geez, so, over a panda. Just a
panda taxidermy mount. So the chances of taxidermying a panda are like zero beyond zero, because not only like can you not just get a panda very easily, but even the ones that are in zoos are still owned by China.
Yeah. So that leads me to what could possibly bring up World War III. Is, have you ever heard that pandas are like the people who think pandas are a conspiracy and they're not real?
Pandas aren't real.
Yeah, have you ever heard that?
I have not heard that one, no.
Yeah, that was like a whole thing there for a little while. I don't believe it, but...
Are they spies or something?
Can you imagine the dedication to live in a panda suit and just spy? Sit in a zoo all day and just pretend like you're eating bamboo. No. So I guess where it kind of came from was, you know, they were talking about how pandas are so hard to breed in captivity and their movements are a lot like humans. Like, so one of the theories was that they were like people in panda suits and China was just like making this whole thing up.
No way.
And the other one was that they were like lab created or something because they're so stupid. And I think the third thing was actually somebody did fake a panda. They took like a sun bear and dyed it. It was in Taiwan or something and faked it as okay. a panda bear. But yeah.
Like they bleached its hair.
I guess so. That poor bear. Could you, it probably had to, I guess, tranquilize it to do all that. But
oh, for sure. That yeah. I haven't heard that one. I've heard other conspiracy theories about the realisticness of animals.
Yeah.
That's funny. Maybe it checks out, because like I said, Atlanta is the only place in the U.S. that has panda bears.
What is up with Atlanta? Because I went to the Atlanta Aquarium before and I think they were like the only place that had a whale shark at the time. What
I don't know,
is so special about Atlanta, like middle of Georgia? Why?
I don't know, maybe just it's so big, like, you know, Atlanta's huge. I don't know either. I remember I did go to the San Diego Zoo when I was a kid. And I did see pandas there. I didn't know they were so rare, though. I didn't understand how special that experience might have been. But they were really cool. They did not seem like humans in bear suits to me. They were cute.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I feel like the odds of us, any of us ever getting to work on a panda bear, you know, is very slim. But
apparently, even if you have like a body of a panda in a freezer, that's not even okay to work on.
Yeah.
Per the Ken Walker story with the Smithsonian.
Yeah. But, you know, just in case there's that one taxidermist that maybe some black market Chinese person tries to sell you a panda bear, just say no. Because you'll probably get hunted down. And I don't even know if the U.S. government would do anything to you, but I bet the Chinese government would.
It would hurt the panda diplomacy.
Yeah, we don't want to mess with that. So... Okay, so let's move on to another animal that is actually very native to the U.S., flying squirrels. I picked this one because it holds a special place in my heart after I challenged my micro taxidermy skills on mounting one for a competition back in 2022.
Yeah, that was a neat little mount that you did. Like, I really liked the setup you had and everything. Little squirrel in the flying position.
Yeah, that really tested my eyesight and my, you know, injection skills and stuff, but... They're somewhat complicated of a thing to say that, like, you cannot have here in the U.S. because all the states vary in their laws, and we have a few different species that call it home. Some are on the endangered list, and some are extremely hard to tell apart. Kind of where I'm going to start is, at least where I'm from, and I think a lot of other states are this way, because there are no states that there's, like, a legal hunting season for flying squirrels. So... if you do find one, like 99% sure every state, you're going to have to get some sort of salvage permit if they even give out salvage permits for them. So like, for instance, mine, a guy brought it to me. He didn't want it, but he was going to get me the salvage permit for it. Kind of funny story is he called the game commission to get the salvage permit. There are people that answer the phones don't really know a whole lot. And she's like, well, we can't even give a permit for that because we don't have them in Pennsylvania.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Like, and well, he's like, clearly not.
He told me, he's like, she said we don't have them. I said, well, we definitely do because I've had other people get permits for these things. So then I had a game warden that just a couple days later came into my shop and I asked him and he's like, yeah, he's like, I can just write you one out now. It was like $25. So if you do want to have one, mount it, whatever, you're going to want to get a salvage permit. And they have to check and make sure that you didn't shoot it. Like, they're going to want to look at it.
Or they inspect it.
Yeah, like, the one that was brought to me, the guy's cat brought it to him.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I was wondering. I was about to ask, like, where did that one come from?
Yeah.
That's a good way to utilize something like that.
Yeah. So the only downside to that was, you know, like, it had a little tiny bit of slippage on its belly because that's, of course, the first place it's going to rot.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Because how soon did he find it? Like, once his cat brought it to him? Like, was it?
Yeah.
Do you know? Like, how fresh it was?
I have no idea. It must have not been too bad because it didn't, like, stink or anything. So what I had done is I got it and I froze it in a bottle of water because I didn't want it to freeze or burn. And I wasn't sure when I was ever going to get to it. So I just froze it in a block of ice.
Yeah, because that thing was tiny. Like, you're not kidding when you say it tested your microtaxidermy skills, because that was tiny. And did you end up, like, splitting the wings? Because they're, like, they're paper thin, literally.
Yeah, there's a lot better than, like, a rabbit, though. Like, it wasn't fragile.
Really?
Yeah, it was pretty much, you know, you can do it with your fingers. It was pretty tough. But, yeah, I mean, like, its little feet were, like, smaller, probably not gonna focus, smaller than, like, my pinky nail. Was how little its little feet were. So they're just tiny, tiny. But anyways, on to a little more about them if you ever do want to taxidermy one or possess one. So there are two, somewhat now three, native species of flying squirrels to the U.S. And the tough part is they're extremely hard to tell apart. Ashley, I'll send you two pictures then in – actually, okay. Three pictures, and good luck figuring
distinguishing
out
distinguishing them. Okay.
So the two main native ones, there's a northern flying squirrel and a southern flying squirrel. The northern ones are just a little bit bigger, like from head to tip of their tail. I think it was like 10 to 12 inches. The southern are like 8 to 10 inches long. And then the only way that you can tell, really, is you look at one up close and on their belly hair. The northern one has a gray color at the base of each hair, and the southern one is just all white.
Oh, man. And yeah, it sounds like these species, do they overlap quite a bit too, like in their ranges?
Yeah, like here in Pennsylvania, like we have both, but the northern one is endangered. So that's the one that you cannot possess regardless of permits or anything.
Oh, so you can get a permit for the one species, but not the other.
Yeah, you can't have the endangered ones at all. But the southern ones, which are thriving, those are the ones that I got the salvage permit for. But, you know, how do you ever tell? Like, I know I was looking at mine trying to figure out, make sure it wasn't a northern one since you couldn't have that. And I'm like, I don't know what it looked like. I don't know. They're complicated. But there is a new species now that they thought was just a northern flying squirrel in the Pacific Northwest, and it's called the Humboldt flying squirrel.
Oh, so that one, they thought it was just a regular northern flying squirrel.
Yep.
Is that correct?
Yeah.
And now they're like, wait, this is actually more of a separate species?
Yeah, so they actually got DNA from both of them, and the Humboldt one has no DNA, like, link to the northern one, and that's how they figured out that it was a separate thing.
That's cool. I wonder if it came from, like, Humboldt County in California.
Maybe.
It's in the Pacific Northwest.
Maybe. All I could think of was Humboldt squids.
I don't know what that is.
Oh, I don't know. I just know that there's Humboldt squids. That's all I know.
I don't know where I know
this from, but I've heard of that.
I would assume they're from the same region as well.
So. Yeah, probably. But, yeah, they're a really common thing people get a lot. Like, I know down in the South.
Really?
People run into flying squirrels all the time.
I didn't know they were that common. I asked you earlier off the podcast, like, are they native here? I don't even know much about flying squirrels. Like, maybe nowhere I've lived has had them. Or I guess maybe I'm not paying enough attention. But
yeah,
they seem pretty rare. But the fact that you can get a salvage permit for them, like a personal one, not just like a educational scientific permit, is pretty good. That's a pretty lenient law as far as laws go.
Yeah. And honestly, I don't know. The other thing I didn't even think of until now was chipmunks. Like, you can't have chipmunks. I don't know if they'd be
not?
The same. Yeah, like, you can't shoot a chipmunk, you can't possess a chipmunk, so they might also be a salvage permit, like if your cat kills it or something, or you find it dead. But I don't know.
That's a good question too, because I've definitely came across some dead chipmunks and stuff. Not that I've done anything with them, but like, I didn't know, I guess I didn't realize what the legalities were.
Yeah, which is weird because you wouldn't think
timber tigers.
Yeah.
They're cute as heck. I don't know either. That's a good one to find out about.
Yeah, yeah. So I'll have to figure that out too. I didn't even think about them because, like, you don't see them that often because they're just so little. And like, you'll be hiking and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, there's a chipmunk. And that's.
Oh, I know. They're so cute, man. Oh, I love them.
Yeah.
They got stuck in a friend of mine's car one time. Like, they made a nest inside, like, some piece of their car. Didn't drive the car for a couple months and then did. And then, you know, chipmunk scramble.
Yeah, that would definitely happen.
That's what I think of when I think of chipmunks, unfortunately, or like unalive chipmunks.
Yeah. Well, that's like what happens with the flying squirrels. They get into people's camps and sheds and stuff, hunting blinds, and just make a little home in there. And they, of course, don't want them in there.
Flying rodent.
Yeah.
They don't really fly. It's more of like a glide.
Yes.
Isn't that right? Yeah. Like, flying is kind of a silly way to say, like, their gliding motion.
Yep, they just glide down through. It's funny. I don't know why I have a story about all these things, but a little funny story about them gliding is Ryan, my husband, was telling me when he was walking through the woods one time. It was like at dusk, and he was walking and he felt this thing just smack him in the back of the head, like land on his neck. And so of course his first instinct is like grab it and fling it. And so he killed this poor little flying squirrel on accident.
Oh, he actually grabbed it though. It, like,
oh, you know what? I don't think he was walking in the woods. I think he got into one of their little wooden hunting blinds, and it jumped down on the back of his neck.
Oh, and then he automatically just, you know, like a spider gets on you or something.
Yeah. R.I.P. little squirrel.
Yeah, so I guess they're pretty common then.
Yeah.
At least up where you're at.
Yeah, you just don't see them because it's like they come out at nighttime. So.
Oh, that makes sense. They're almost like little sugar glider type things, huh?
Yep. Yeah.
So you got to keep that little flying squirrel you did, obviously, right?
Yeah.
Is it just in your house?
Yeah, I just like in my spare bedroom because I don't know what else to do with them. I thought about, I think I'm going to make them that I can like hang the tree on the wall. Maybe I'll stick them there or something.
Mm.
Yeah, because I don't know what else to do with them.
Because that's a cool little thing.
Yeah. What I'd like to maybe do is we have the Ned Smith Nature Center close to us. And I thought about maybe either they could make it or I could make it, get like a little glass case thing
like
that at
dome.
Least it could stick in there because it's a well done flying squirrel and like not many people get to see them up close,
but yeah,
I wouldn't want people touching it, so it'd be in the glass case and they could actually see how little these things are. I might do that.
That's a neat idea. Yeah, something like that, just because I've never seen a flying squirrel taxidermied besides yours.
Yeah, they're out there. There's just some really, the form that you buy for them is disgusting. So a lot
did you actually buy the form?
No, I made everything for mine.
Yeah.
So that's what most that you see are in this disgusting looking flying.
Because they're so
pose.
Tiny. I would imagine even carcass casting, that would be fairly simple.
Yeah. Yep. It's just the wings or the tough wings and little feet and the face and ears are tough. But yeah, it wasn't expensive to carcass cast. So that's why I did it.
Yeah. You just take like a couple dollops of some kind of casting material.
Yeah, wasn't much. But yeah, so in conclusion, if you want one, contact your local game warden, Fish and Wildlife, and you know, you can most likely get a little salvage permit.
If it's a southern.
Yes.
Flying squirrel, not a northern flying squirrel, right?
Yep, only southern flying squirrels.
Make sure you check the belly.
Yeah, good luck.
Yeah. So talking about states having different laws and what you cannot have, what you can have, I know I've touched on this in other episodes, but never really dived into it. So the fact that in the state of California, you cannot possess a mountain lion.
Yeah, tell me about that. Like, what's, you know, what's the story on that?
So the passage of the California Wildlife Protection Act of 1990 by California voters established that mountain lion are a specially protected mammal in California. It is unlawful to possess, transport, import, or sell any mountain lion or part or product thereof, so including taxidermy mounts. The status and other statutes prohibit the California Department of Fish and Wildlife from developing hunting seasons or limits of the species. The act established certain exemptions from that prohibition, such as mountain lions may be preserved, or such as mountain lions may only be harvested, one, if a depredation permit is issued to take an individual that has killed livestock or pets, to preserve public safety, or to protect federally listed bighorn sheep populations. So basically, that's a lot of words, but mountain lions in California, there's a total ban on not only hunting mountain lions, but importing mountain lions. So even if you're a California resident and you kill a mountain lion in another state such as Idaho, you cannot import any parts of that lion into California. So taxidermists are able to taxidermy lions, able to mount lions in California only when they are working with Fish and Wildlife here in California, only if there has been a mountain lion that killed for depredation or some other reason, like if it was found dead. So a misconception a lot of soft California people have is that these lions are living peacefully and enjoying freedom from being hunted in California. But truly, lion populations are growing, which causes lions to encroach further into human inhabited areas, in which the lions become a nuisance or a danger. You know, they're affecting pets or livestock, and they are subject to be killed by a trapper who works for the state. So, and that's a pretty common thing, is like lions do get killed pretty often in California. They're just not killed by hunters. It's killed by people who work for the state.
Which is a bummer, because the hunters are the ones who are going to value the animal more than, you know, just getting rid of it and put in a compost pile or whatever they do with them.
Yeah, so like the thing is, you know, these trappers come in when this animal has already become a nuisance, right? So like now it's being killed for reasons unrelated to like conservation. It's just a nuisance animal or whatever at this point. And so being killed when otherwise, like, in order to prevent that scenario altogether, they could have, you know, specialized seasons, limited takes on these animals, gain revenue from hunters.
Yep. Instead of paying somebody to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing that I, you know, to not hunt them is kind of one thing, but then to not have any kind of importation at all of them is another thing. So every other state in the U.S., you can taxidermy, you can mount a mountain lion. You just cannot do it in California unless it's for fish and game.
Hmm. So if you mount it for fish and game, it what, then goes into an educational center?
Yeah, it can't be like kept for like, you know, personal use or whatever. The law specifically states, the law specifically states that no person may sell or possess any mountain lion part or product thereof unless he is in possession of a valid non-transferable permit issued by the department. A permit shall be issued by the California Department of Fish and Wildlife with the following stipulations. So, number one, any person who can demonstrate that the mountain lion part or part product thereof was in his or her possession on or before June 6, 1990, or two, a nonprofit museum or government-owned facility generally open to the public, or an educational institution for display, exhibition, or storage, or for a scientific or educational purpose as determined by the department. So that's a lot of words to just say you can have a mountain lion if you already had it before 1990, or if it's going to go into some kind of scientific display or educational display as determined by the department.
Yeah, that would really suck to live in California and go shoot a mountain lion. I mean, I guess you wouldn't go on a mountain lion hunt then, because I don't know. It's kind of like the people who go on a polar bear hunt and can't bring it back home.
Yeah, exactly. It's very similar to that. Like, it's just unfortunate that, like, you can't even, as a taxidermist in California, be hired to mount mountain lions, even like for out-of-state customers.
Yeah,
or, you know, anything like that. There's, you know, tanneries in California, they're not allowed to process mountain lions either unless it's under those special circumstances. So it's just unfortunate.
It is very unfortunate. That would be like such a bummer. It reminds me a little bit of, there's a regulation in Florida that you can't buy or sell or have any black bears.
Oh yeah, there's something weird about that too, isn't it?
Yeah. Yep.
I'd be curious about like the populations of black bears though in Florida. Like, is there a large population of black bears in Florida?
I thought they had a lot of black bears, but I mean, it's just kind of the same thing. Like, California has So California and mountain lions, they have a lot of mountain lions, and there was that guy that got killed by one just, I don't know, a few weeks ago.
But so yeah, like you're saying, just a couple weeks ago, there was an instance where two guys were out. They were shed hunting in California, like in the Sierra Nevadas, and they were both attacked by a mountain lion. One of them unfortunately passed away, and the other one was like severely injured. And it sheds some light on the way that these animals are not being managed well in California, and the lions have like a lessened fear of humans. So that's another reason, like, yeah, it's kind of like a offset reason, like why they should be maybe hunted and managed and stuff. But it is like a real reason that like these mountain lions are going to continually lose the fear of humans. And then that only adds to the fact that they're encroaching on human habitat or human inhabited areas, I guess you should say, and further cause a nuisance, further become a danger to people. It just, it seems like a lot of mismanagement. And like, just, I obviously like experienced that when I lived there and like kind of dealt with it firsthand about like how mountain lions were handled and stuff. Like, it's just, it's just so frustrating how it's just so concrete. It's a total ban. Like, there's no chance of importing mountain lions and no chance of just any kind of management.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a huge bummer. That seems like there's such a soft spot in people's hearts for big cats. So things like this happen because they don't want to see them killed. But like you said, they are still being managed, just not how they probably should be.
So. Yeah. So, and another, like, so California, they also just banned bobcat hunting, but you can still have bobcats and you could still import bobcats. Like, if you were to kill one out of state, you can bring one back in. That's fine. Just mountain lions are a total ban. I feel like feel very personally attached to this issue. And so every time I think about it, it makes my blood just boil a little bit more.
Yes. I know you're very passionate about the Colorado, yes. California mountain lion.
Yeah, I ban. Am. I just, yeah. It really grinds my gears so bad.
I don't blame you. So, first of all, I guess I should ask, is there anything else you want to say about that then?
No.
So, speaking of big cats, that kind of leads me into somewhat the new regulations on the African lion imports into the U.S. So, I don't know what you know about it. I was always under the impression that you can't import any African lions. What have you heard about it? Have you heard anything?
I was under the impression that there was like some new regulations on it about African lions, but I actually have like super limited knowledge on African lions at all. So that could just be me coming up with an answer in my mind. So I don't know. I guess because you see African lions like mounted, obviously. Yeah. And so are those animals that came from like zoos or like independent owners here in the U.S.? Like, they weren't imported?
No. So what this actually was, so I was under the impression that you just weren't allowed, like, they're trying to get rid of trophy hunting in Africa is what I thought.
Yeah, the trophy hunting.
Yes. But that was not the case. So apparently what used to be the case was that in Africa, most lions that were hunted and brought back to the U.S. were captive bred. So they were just, you know, breeding them in captivity, letting them out. Hunters would shoot them. So it wasn't like building up the wild population at all. So what this ban did is it banned all captive bred lions from being imported, which then discourages hunters to go over there and shoot captive, which means that there's more money going into funding wild lions because, of course, hunters are going to fund the conservation of these wild African lions. And that didn't happen when they were just paying people who raised them in cages, you know, pretty much.
Yeah, I guess I could see where that's coming from. Then I also want to think, well, it's not like you can really high fence in it, right? So it's not really like they're on one of those high fence ranches.
No, but I think they would kind of release them like shortly before the person would hunt.
Yeah.
And they probably weren't really roaming very far. So
make it like a canned hunt type thing.
Yeah, yeah.
So I could see where that could pose an issue.
Yeah.
I guess if that's the case, then yeah, but I just wonder, like, what exactly they're calling captive raised lions. Like, what is the rules regarding that? Because, you know, a lot of animals that you get in Africa are from, like, ranches that own the animals. And are those considered captive animals?
I think they are for like, all the plains game. Like, they're considered like a high fence. But I guess, since all those animal numbers are like so high and populous in the wild population of them, they aren't really worried about the high fence, plains game, antelope, you know, things like that as much as the lions, that I don't think their numbers are low. They just wanted to make sure that it encouraged other countries who might otherwise want to eradicate their lion population, like the wild population. It encourages them to actually put a value on this animal's head, kind of, and put money into growing. Yeah.
I see. I could see how that would make more sense then. I guess that I had no idea about that.
Yeah.
And you hear about bans and you think like, what the hell? Like, why are they banning animal hunting? But that does make sense. I could see where like a country, they might have like a nuisance lion population. And so that's like a danger to people. And like, there's mm-hmm. such a huge reason for them to want to like eradicate lions. And then if it's just easy enough to put a lion in a pen and then still get, you know, still sell the lion via hunting.
Yeah. Yeah, I always thought it was a bad thing, but it's actually a really good move as far as growing the, they're doing it for trophy hunting pretty much.
Yeah. So I guess back to like the importation laws of it. So you can import a lion that was wild, not captive. So
if it was, so there's proof that the lion was wild and, or that had like a wild, like a wildlife plan, like money from that went towards funding the wild population type of deal.
Oh, it's like it went towards the conservation of lions specifically.
Yeah.
Gosh, that can get tricky. No wonder it's like seen as just a ban, because that probably can get tricky. And then you got to prove everything and it just becomes such a hassle.
Yeah. So like places like Tanzania is like one place that you can go and hunt lions and import them. There's no ban on that. A lot of places in South Africa, that's where the ban kind of comes into play, because that was where a lot of the captive ones came from. There's a couple other countries too, and I did not write them down, but I knew Tanzania was one that people can go to and get a lion imported.
Oh, so it probably does vary like by country to country quite a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Good news is it's not a complete ban. It's just a semi-ban. So as long as you're going over there and shooting wild African lions, you can get them imported back and be good to go. Because there are lion replicas now as well, I guess, for people that can't import theirs.
Yeah, they look pretty good. Like there's a lot of places, same people are doing like the polar bears, and you know, they're doing a lot of replicas of lions. I think they're pretty good looking.
Yeah. Yeah. They're pretty neat. And of course they... most of them all have big, beautiful black manes. You know,
they're not a scraggly looking lion,
which is what you do get a lot of times with the wild ones. You know, they're not raised in a pen till they're, I don't know, how do I want to say this? If you can breed your lions, like pick out your genetics, you'll breed beautiful black maned lions. They don't have to be old. It's just a genetic trait. And that doesn't happen in the wild. So you're kind of unknown what you might get.
Yeah, I think I've seen kind of a misconception from people where they'll see like a real lion mount. You know, it's the real skin and whatever. And they're like, oh, somebody messed up when they mounted that. Or it doesn't look funny. Or it doesn't look right. And like, no, it's just the fact that that's like what a true lion looks like with their mane. They're not this big plumage of like beautiful, you know, flowing hair like you imagine.
Yeah, most of them are pretty straggly.
Yeah, they look like they just like rolled out of bed.
Yes, we did a beautiful big black mane lion, but that was also from a zoo. So that's why.
I guess if it's just from a zoo, you would just need like a standard process of getting permission.
Yeah, yep.
That's probably pretty standard.
Yeah, whatever permits you get from there. Yeah, so if you have hunters wanting to go and bring their African lions back, just instruct them. They have to go somewhere where they are wild, or approved funds go towards the wild, I guess, conservation of lions in Africa.
Yeah, that's great info. I did not know like any about that. So
yeah, I learned something new. So hopefully you guys did too.
Yeah, for sure. We covered a lot. So
yes, we did. It got a little longer than I thought. I'm glad we just stuck with 3 animals each.
Oh, I know. Instead of like 5. That's awesome.
But it is. But for other animals and products that are regulated, you can go to our Instagram and our Facebook, and we are going to share the link that is to a great pamphlet from the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And it goes over things like polar bears and like things like walruses and sea turtles and ivory. Like, it's a pretty neat little pamphlet. So you might want to check that out.
Yeah, I'll definitely be checking that out too. But we would like to thank you for listening to our podcast, Wildverse. We hope you enjoyed listening and learning about animals that can carry some heavy regulations here in the U.S. And hopefully some of this info helped keep you from paying some hefty fines. If you'd like to stay up to date on new episode releases, you can follow us on Facebook at Wildverse Taxidermy Podcast and Instagram at Wildverse Podcast.
And don't forget to subscribe to our YouTube channel, Wildverse Podcast, to see when new videos come out.
Or you can leave us some love on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen by leaving us a review.
Have a great week, and remember to throw out that blue jay that you stuck in your freezer a year ago.
Yes, no.
All right, thanks. Bye.